Hello.
Hey.
Oh, I can hear you.
Yay.
I don't know why this is so hard for us to do.
I don't know, but it's okay.
Oh, goodness. Okay, so we're recording. Finally. Okay. How are you, Kelly?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
I'm tired.
Yeah.
I've been doing some major cleaning, so...
Are you working next weekend? I can't remember.
Girl, I don't know. I'm so irritated with that.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm going to Eureka Springs next weekend.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And then I can't remember. Next weekend, I'm on call. Hey.
That's right. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
So today's Sunday. So this episode will come out tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it will. On March 2nd.
Yay, March. I'm so excited for spring.
I know. Today it was actually like pretty, like it's kind of windy and stormy, but for the most part it was super nice.
Yeah. I was going to, we ended up getting an oil change. So... that was my Sunday. Cleaning and oil changes.
I had a kind of ridiculous weekend, so that's okay. But anyways.
You did?
Yeah, I did.
Was it just busy or?
Yeah, and Tessa has a abscessed tooth under like a cap tooth and her whole face swelled up and...
aww.
It was just a, yeah, it's okay. She's okay now. We've got her on strong antibiotics, so.
Okay.
Yeah. So, welcome back to Dying to Kill, everybody.
Yes. I feel like we've already done this, and we have.
Oh, my God. I'm actually super glad that we waited to re-record it so that it wasn't going to sound so, like, monotone, I guess. Yeah,
like we had just done it
because
I've already forgotten everything now. So we're recording, tell everybody, each from home separately. This is our first time to do that.
Successfully, hopefully.
I hope so.
God bless it.
So hopefully we'll be back together again soon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll definitely have to.
A pinch.
Yeah, I'm ready to get back on our like recording sessions though. Those are fun.
I know, they're much more fun than this.
Yes, they are.
Okay, do you have any death row facts?
I do. Okay, Thursday, February 20th, Nicholas Todd Sutton was executed by the state of Tennessee, and Nathaniel Woods is scheduled to be executed by Alabama in, I believe, four days, excuse me. And Alabama has 182 inmates on death row, and it's the only state to allow juries to recommend the death penalty on less than a unanimous vote of all 12 jurors. So federally, you have to have a unanimous vote, but in the state of Alabama, you can be put to death without all jurors on a case actually thinking that death is appropriate, which I find
scary.
Yeah, it's like kind of appalling, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
Ugh, I
don't
know.
You need to think about it for you. Like, say you didn't do something.
Right.
But half the people are like, oh yeah, I think she probably did it. And the other half are like, yeah. I don't know. I'm not
sure. Right.
But it doesn't matter.
Right. Like, and then the other thing is, like, what do they, where they kind of base the punishment off, like, the how heinous the crime is? And it's like, right. So you did do it, but was it really, like, worth the death penalty or not? And
right.
I mean, I'm not saying, like, I'm not, because, you know, you can be put to death for things other than murder. And so if it's not murder and it's ununanimous, like, is that even allowed? It's wild, wild. I think that is all of my facts. So.
Okay. I think I had some of the same facts. Okay, I have this one. It's a big, long one. It's about meals again, because I can't get over all these meal facts.
This is why you're my favorite human.
Because that's always about food, no matter. You're going to die, but what are you going to eat?
Right. I mean, it's so fascinating.
Yeah, but I remember that the one fact that we read, so I don't know what's true. I'm just telling y'all what I read on the internet. That it was a few hours before. This one that I read saying that it's a day or two prior, and they call it a special meal. Alcohol and tobacco, which we had a question about, are usually denied, and unorthodox or unavailable requests are replaced with substitutes. For example, if they ask for filet mignon, they'll probably get a hamburger steak. In Louisiana, it's interesting that the warden will eat the last meal with the inmate.
Oh, I remember you telling me. That is, like, it's a lot. That's a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like unnecessary. But, I mean, well, it seems kind of, I guess if it's a few days before, it's not that bad. But if it's a couple hours before, it seems like a lot. What if I want to eat alone? Like,
I guess you could probably tell them you want to eat alone, but
it's like a respect thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, Virginia, they have a 28-day rotating menu, and so they have to choose something off of that menu.
Oh, that kind of sucks.
Yeah, so every 28 days you're going to eat the same thing, and then you have to choose one of those for your death meal.
For your death meal.
Let's see. Okay, so ordered 24 tacos, and they gave him 4 tacos. So you don't always get what you ask for. And okay. In Florida, the meals must be purchased locally, and they can't be more than $40.
Oh, so,
yeah.
That's so weird. That monetary amount. Yeah, I mean, you could eat really well. You could get some crab legs from like a Red Lobster.
Yeah.
You could. I'm trying to think. $40 Outback. You could definitely get a steak. You could get some Olive Garden.
Yep. You could get Applebee's. A black Applebee's and chicken salad. Those are good.
Yes.
My last meal, but
right, but I mean, if you really had a hankering for it, like,
yeah,
maybe it's less than $40.
And also that an inmate can keep his last meal private if he so chooses.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, I don't know if they would, but
I'm just like, what are you eating that you're like, you know, I did this terrible thing and the whole world knows it, but I don't want anyone to know that I ate this for my last meal. Like, what are you eating?
I think it's just a jerk move.
Right. It's just like an option to be a dick. Like, oh, yeah. You were a terrible human. And also, you're going to be a dick. Okay.
Yeah. Cool.
Like that. I think the one that sucks the most, like, I understand the whole, like, we're okay, like, you asked for 24 tacos. We're going to give you the tacos you want, but there's only going to be 4 of them. Like, I get that. But the one that sucks, I think the one that I would just not be able to deal with would be the rotating menu, unless it's, like, super good food.
Oh, I know. Because, listen, they're probably on death row for, what, like, 19 years already?
So you literally.
Every 28 days for 19 years. I would be like, just hold the meal. I don't even need it.
Right, like, please don't make me eat it. I mean, God bless. That is it's like, and is so their breakfast, lunch, and dinner is that way. My gosh, it's just wild.
Yeah, I think if I had to pick a death meal right now, I would pick tacos for life. I would probably get like 6 bowls of queso rice and a bunch of tacos with those soft shells.
Little, just like
just the beef tacos with little puffy shells.
Okay, those are so fire. You know which other ones I like? Is their mango habanero chicken? Oh my gosh, yeah. Girl.
Oh, one of each.
Okay, let me right. Let me see. If I was to have a last meal, I'd probably want. Yeah, I'm still gonna go with crab legs, and like a good salad, and I'm trying to think. I normally don't eat like red meat because it causes my stomach to hurt, but like if I'm going out anyways,
I was gonna say,
I'm gonna want like a rare porterhouse with some crab legs and lots of butter to dip that shit in and just really not even worry about the GI issues after. Mm-mm.
I'm trying to think. I would probably want a bowl of grits too.
Oh, this is why we're friends. I love grits too.
Okay, next time you go to Dolphin Island, get grits from, I think it's Islanders.
Okay, Islanders is the one that has the upstairs, right?
Yes, and the little elevator you can go up and down.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Go there and get grits. I'm going to go, next time we go, I'm going to get grits every morning because that's how good they are. Oh, she told me how to make them and it sounded really amazing. Easy, but I haven't done it. I just eat them every time I go there. So I would ask for that too.
Do you like shrimp and grits with like the grit?
I don't like shrimp.
Oh, okay.
I don't like the texture.
It is kind of weird. It's like a grape, but it's meat.
Yeah.
I don't know. Okay. No, no. Oh. I'm craving tacos for life now.
I know, me too.
Oh wow. Okay, so I really really want to do like a last meal potluck.
Yeah, we should do that.
I think that would be so fun. I mean, like, I will bring the filet mignon, you bring the raw onions.
Yeah, I'll bring the raw onions.
We can have someone else bring the chili burgers, like, just, oh my gosh, this would be perfect.
Yes. We should do it.
Oh my word.
Okay, so today.
Yeah, sorry. I got.
It's okay. Today we're talking about Von Taylor. He had, what was his middle name? Lester? Was it Von Lester? Did I make that up? He had three names.
Oh, I thought it was something. Von.
I just wrote Von Taylor down, but it's like, I think, I'm going to Google it. It's Von Lester Taylor, I believe.
Is it? Okay.
But I don't want to lie the whole time.
Not the whole time, Misty.
No, not the whole time. Yes, Von Lester Taylor and his friend Edward Deli from Utah. I call them friends. They were acquaintances.
they're halfway house acquaintances, right? Okay, let me not spoil your story.
Yes, they are. Okay, so we're going to Salt Lake City, Utah. And I'm just gonna show you where I got all my information was from. FletcherMarple.com, Deseret News, CBS News. I'm looking. And the Salt Lake Tribune and theattorneygeneral.utah.gov. That is okay, that's where I got everything. So we're actually okay, so we're in Salt Lake City is where we start.
Okay.
In December of 1990, you've got two guys, Von Lester Taylor and Edward Deli, and they were living in a halfway house. Von Taylor was 25 or 26 and Edward Deli was 21. They were both on parole, Von Taylor for aggravated burglary and Edward Deli for arson. Von Taylor had been sentenced to 5 years to life for that burglary. It was a first degree felony. In October is when he was paroled. and they have like step downs when you get paroled. Mm-hmm. So he was like paroled to, I don't know, what, some certain building. And then on November 23rd, he was transferred to the halfway house. And then Edward Deli was convicted of aggravated arson, which was a third degree felony, and he was paroled to the halfway house on November 27th. So about 4 days after Von Lester Taylor was. I don't think anywhere that I've read that they knew each other before they met at that halfway house.
Okay.
So on December 14th, just about 2 weeks later, they went out for a job search and they did not return that afternoon when they were supposed to. So
days later?
About 2 weeks from November 27th to December 14th.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. They are just reckless together.
Yeah. So I guess since they were on parole, they didn't have like free reign of their lives. They had to tell them where they were going, when they would be back. They had to check in. They had curfews and all of that. So they said they were going out looking for jobs and they didn't return. So employees there immediately notified the authorities that they were walkaways, and they started searching for them. Where they ended up going was about 40 miles east of Salt Lake City into the mountains, where there were a lot of cabins.
Like vacation homes?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Since they only made it a couple weeks, at the halfway house, and then they made it about a month after they escaped there together before they committed this crime. So they were on the run for about a month. On December 22nd, they broke into this cabin. It was in Oakley, Utah. The family who owned the cabin arrived planning to spend Christmas there, and they came in, I guess, separate cars. So the first group that arrived was Beth Potts. She was 76 years old. She was blind. Her daughter KT was with her. She was 49. And Kay's daughter, Lene, I don't know if I'm saying it right, Teed, who was 20. So the way I think the cabin looked in the pictures was, because it says they took them upstairs, but I think you like pull into a garage on the first right. level, and then you go upstairs, and that's where the living room and kitchen and stuff is. So they said they took them upstairs, and it wasn't 3 minutes after arriving that they were both, the older women, shot dead. He did not shoot the 20-year-old Lene, but he shot them in front of her. I don't know why he shot them and not her. I don't know. And I'm saying he, but whichever one. They both shot. We'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
They both had guns, and they both shot the women. But they argue over who actually did the killing. So, not very long later, Kay's husband, Roth, shows up with their other daughter, Trisha, and she was 16. So, in the garage, he was shot immediately when he got out of his car or off the snowmobile in the head. They took his wallet out of his pocket and they got $105 off of him. Then they doused him in gasoline and set him and the house on fire.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So, I mean, I can see it's like pattern for the guys, because one of them was on parole for aggravated burglary and the other one for arson. So
wow. And then just that instant friendship and bond, and then they were like, let me tell you arson, and you tell me what you love about burglary,
and then we'll live together.
And then we're gonna explore new things. Just yeah. really built on that relationship quickly.
Yes. So they did not hurt Trisha, the 16-year-old, either, but they took them hostage. So from what I understand about this neighborhood is that it was a gated community, and there's a parking lot at the bottom of the mountain. and you would park your car there, and there was some sort of storage units where you would keep snowmobiles to get back and forth to the house.
Okay.
So that's why I'm just assuming that the dad was on a snowmobile, maybe, and had the girls and drive them down with each of the guy on the back down the mountain to the parking lot. Coming down to near the gate, and there is their uncle who was showing up to the house for Christmas. And he's waving at them like, hey girls, and they ignore him. And they go around to the parking lot to get into the car. And he's running over, like waving his arms.
You didn't recognize me.
I know, like, hey. Uncle
he's
Randy.
Probably got great uncle jokes. He's just like, girls, get back here.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So they hop in the car and they just fly past him. They completely ignore him. In their mind,
they're like trying to make sure that they don't give away that he's part of their crew. And yes. He's like, girls.
They're trying their hardest to save his life.
Right. Oh God. And he's just uncling it up.
Yeah.
I love it. Oh my word.
So they take off in the car. Just a few minutes later, he sees another snowmobile coming down the mountain, and I guess there were less people around at this time because in 1990, like, it's going to be cold there and it's snowy and everything, but the temperatures were below zero, so it was colder than it normally was. Mm-hmm. So people were coming later. They weren't spending as much time there. They were just going to come for Christmas, and so there weren't as many people around. But with it being so cold, he saw this other snowmobile coming down the mountain, and the guy had on no gloves, no jacket, no hat or helmet. And he was like, you know, this person's crazy. But as they got closer, he could see that there was blood on them. Their face was swollen and red. And finally, he realized it was his brother. And so he comes down.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So remember, he had been shot and set on fire. he played dead. And as soon as the girls and guys went out, got on the snowmobiles, he ran into the shower, stripped.
Misty, he played dead on fire.
Yeah, how do you do that? He's a different kind of person than me. I would have ran around hysterically.
You are special for sure. Like, wow.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yes, he played dead. And then he jumped into the shower, rinsed off, and then went out, jumped on a snowmobile, and took off down the mountain after his girls. He was able to tell his brother what happened, and so his brother, Randy, called the police immediately, told him about everything that had happened. So they send a helicopter for Ross, and they airlift him to the hospital. Of course, they send all the investigators to the house, and then they go on a high-speed chase with the girls and the guys in this car. And it says they chased them through several towns before they were caught and arrested. I guess whoever was driving, it didn't say which guy was driving, but they ran the car off the road into a ditch.
Mm-hmm.
And then got out of the car, one of them. I don't even think it said, it didn't even tell me which one in the articles I read, but got out, had the gun in his hand. Police officers fired two shots, so they got scared, dropped their gun, and they were arrested. It says the girls were never physically harmed, but they were traumatized after watching their dad and grandmother and mother get shot.
Yeah.
Set on fire. I guess they don't know that their dad was playing dead, so they just think they're all dead.
Oh my goodness.
So
that is some trauma.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine. Ugh. And at 16 and 20, like, I couldn't imagine. So at the community, they made everyone leave, like, that lived there. And none of their residents were let in until they had completely finished, like, scouring the area.
Mm-hmm.
The house didn't burn completely down, but there are pictures that I'll post up that where it shows how the rooms were partially burned. So the state medical examiner was there investigating, the fire marshal, other detectives were there. I think I'm looking for my notes. Somewhere it talks about the first officer that got there when the brother had called. When he walked in, he said he could smell burning hair and clothing. And then he found the upstairs on fire. And he could see the blood had froze in the garage where the dad had been shot.
Mm-hmm.
When he went upstairs, he said the living room carpet was so drenched with blood that it pulled onto the wooden planks underneath, and icicles, like bloody icicles, were hanging from the boards, from the floorboards. There's a picture of that too. So that's just how cold it was there.
Oh my gosh.
And that's a lot of blood.
That is a lot of blood.
To go that deep.
That
carpet and boards
and still form the icicle. Like, that's disgusting.
Yeah. And what's weird, I don't understand this part. So they shot the women. And then they drug them across the living room and out onto the deck. And they covered them up with a blanket. And then they covered them with snow.
This is the part I don't get. Yes. Okay. I'm sorry. I remember this.
And I don't know why. If you were just going to hide the crime, I could see, because that would keep them frozen. The neighbors wouldn't smell decaying body. That would let you get away with it for a little bit longer.
Right.
But if you set the house on fire,
right,
that's going to alert the neighbors of a crime or a fire.
And it's going to melt the snow.
Yes. And the bodies aren't going to be burned to hide evidence that way. I don't understand it. It doesn't make any sense to me. It would not be how I would plan this crime out.
I'm actually super happy right now that I can't make eye contact with you whenever you say that. Y'all, Misty's eyes are super intense, and sometimes she says things like, when I'm gonna kill you, I'm gonna go to several different Home Depots, and she just keeps eye contact, and now she's talking about when she redoes Von Lester's crime, how to do it where it makes more sense. Like, oh God. But listen, Misty, for real though, this was the point whenever we talked about this earlier, because we did discuss this a little bit, y'all, where I was like, okay, not that I thought that they were saying, like, that's not what I'm saying, but it just feels like with that whole, like, just increase in the type of crime and the compared to their previous crimes, like, I just feel like there has to be a certain level of, like, inebriation, drug use possibly, or just that they were just really that encouraged by each other. I don't know, but
I was gonna say, do you think it's worse because there was somebody else there with them?
I mean, if you find someone who shares the same interest as you, Like, you can get very passionate about something. And I guess things like arson and murder and burglary are the same. I wouldn't know. But I mean, I guess I can get a little excited about some things whenever I have someone to be excited about them with. So maybe it was just like they were just indulging each other, you know?
Yeah. I don't know.
Have friends that stop you from arsoning things, not the other way around.
Yeah, not encouraging.
Right.
So the police found, because you know the house did not burn all the way down, so the police found a video camera with a tape inside, and they were expecting family videos. I read somewhere they believed the family had already been there at that cabin. And okay. They had left to go eat or something, and then they were just coming back. So they feel like the guys knew that they had been there, and they knew they were coming back, so they were laying in wait for them. Mm-hmm. So the police had thought, you know, it's a video camera. There's going to be family stuff on here from their stay here. But turns out it was Vaughn Lester Taylor and Edward Deli on the video camera opening the family's Christmas presents.
No.
Yeah. So that's weird that they're just opening their presents, talking to them. So that's how I think they got him for the death penalty, because that's premeditated. Like, they knew they were coming. They were waiting there to kill them. They knew they weren't going to need these Christmas presents, so they were seeing what they got.
And they videotaped it.
Yes. Which was another stupid thing. Don't videotape yourself.
Yeah.
You have no defense.
I mean, and if you wanted to make those memories, take it with you. What are you doing? That's so weird.
Yeah, they're weird.
Do you think maybe they were planning like a, what is that bear's name? Or the little girl Goldilocks thing where they, they weren't planning, like maybe, okay, it sounds premeditated, but maybe it wasn't. And maybe they were just like, you know what would be really cool? If we broke into this cabin, stole their Christmas, and left them a videotape of us doing it. Like, that's bizarre, but I just don't understand why else you would do that. Like,
I don't either. But they say that Taylor also told a friend prior before he ever even escaped, that once he did escape, that he had planned on robbing houses and then killing owners for their cars.
Mm.
No, but they did. I don't feel like they robbed them of much.
Like $105, I think he said.
Yeah, $105. Yeah. And they didn't say they took anything else from the house.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's just, it doesn't make any sense to me. They were tried separately when it went to trial. And Edward Deli chose to go to trial. And he ended up with life in prison with the possibility of parole after 62 years. However, they said he probably won't get parole because of this is what he did last time he was on parole.
Right.
So he's already run that. Of course, he would be like, 62, 83 years old. So he could still burn something. He could burn the nursing home up.
Oh, he for sure could. I mean, there are some 82 year olds out here getting it. So yeah.
They say he'll probably be denied parole. Vaughn Lester Taylor is the one that ended up with the death penalty. And he tried saying that he needed a new hearing because the case against him was tainted. His lawyers say that he was there, but the actual gun that killed the woman was Edward Deli's gun and not Taylor's.
What?
Yeah. They say he was there and he shot, but his bullet didn't actually kill the women.
Oh my word.
Yeah. His death row appeal lawyers say that he was misled about the state's case when he entered a plea. And it says attorney Brian Pomerantz said he really knew, in essence, absolutely nothing about what evidence they had and what was going on. So they're trying to say he didn't know what was happening. So he should get a new hearing. However, the state's attorneys say that Taylor was behind much of the violence and that Deli was surprised when Taylor started shooting. So, and I don't know, I want to say that they got that from witnesses, from the girls, from the daughters that survived, is where they get that information at. The Assistant Attorney General, Aaron, I'm going to say Riley. I can't read that. She says that there's no reason to hold the new hearing because in Utah, he would still be guilty even if he didn't fire the shots, because Utah has in the law, they have a law that says accomplices are considered equally responsible.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't support the death penalty anyways, but the whole attempted murder thing has always kind of gotten me, because it's like, well, you weren't successful, but you were willing to use the force and to take someone's life and to pull that trigger. So,
yeah,
like
that's what I wanted.
Yeah, right, right. Like you were willing to do that. So that's just interesting.
Mm-hmm. And he appealed in 2012, and he said then that the trial was unfair because 75% of his jury was Mormon, and he was a self-proclaimed devil worshiper. So, I guess the lawyers for him was saying that he should have a percentage, at least half of the jurors should believe the same as him.
Wow.
I don't think you would find that in Utah.
Probably
I think
not.
It would be hard.
I think that would be hard. Yep. I mean, we can't really even get fair trials for people's socioeconomic background and race and things. So I don't know about his devil worship.
Which you would have to just like put an ad out to try to get a jury that is the same as whoever is on trial.
You would have to imagine
you can't randomly
that jury?
Call in. But you can't randomly like bring in people for jury duty.
No.
And know that you're going to have at least 6 devil worshippers. If you call in 45 people to start questioning them to see if they would be good for your jury, how would you? There would be no way that out of 40 something people in that area, that 6 of them would be
right
devil worshippers or
not Mormon in Utah.
Then, yeah, then it would be something else, I'm sure. But I mean, there's just no way. There's no way to do that unless you put an ad out saying we need devil worshippers for this upcoming trial.
But they have to be in Utah. And I mean, that would be like every devil worshiper in Utah, most like. I mean, actually, I don't know that. Maybe Satanism is like a big prevalent religion, and I just don't know that. But I would imagine that there's not that many, because I don't actually know any. So
yeah, either.
So yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah, but he lost that appeal anyways. And that was the last of his state appeals that he had. But he took it to a federal court on March 8, 2019. This I got from the attorneygeneral.utah.gov, and I just kind of wrote it down verbatim because I really didn't know how to summarize it. Mm-hmm. But March 8, 2019, It said, last week, a federal judge issued a ruling that severely delays the execution of admitted double murderer Vaughn Lester Taylor, who pled guilty. While we respect the United States District Court and this judge in particular, the decision causes us great concern. The state of Utah must now prepare for a new phase of prolonged litigation as the victims and their families wait even longer for justice. And then it goes on talking about the history of the crimes and what they did. And then it said, last week's ruling, after several years of argument and evidence about whether Taylor fired any of the shots that inflicted the victim's fatal wounds, a federal judge found that he did not. Rejecting the state's arguments and Taylor's own admissions that he was guilty of capital murder, it's clear he fired shots and participated at the very least as an accomplice. However, the court declared Taylor is actually innocent. It is the view of the state of Utah that Taylor is not innocent at all. This federal review of Taylor's 1991 guilty plea and death sentence has spanned 12 years so far. We're concerned the court's ruling now permits Taylor to raise dozens of new complaints and further delay justice for the victims and their families. This ruling does not, this ruling does not send Mr. Taylor home or even get him a new trial, said Utah Assistant Solicitor General Andrew Peterson. However, it means that Taylor can now exploit a technicality to delay justice. He will do this by bringing claims in federal court that he should have raised in the state's court decades ago. Peterson estimates this technicality will delay Taylor's execution by as much as another decade. This decision disregards Utah accomplice liability law, Taylor's multiple confessions, and most distressingly, the feelings of the victims' families who have pleaded for a speedy justice, Peterson said. The state of Utah is now preparing for a prolonged litigation, at the same time exploring all available options in response to the federal court's ruling. So that's where it is as of 2019. I haven't read anything that's happened since then. But yeah, that's terrible because you think 1990, what is that, 30 years?
30 years.
Yeah. So 30 years, and it just kind of sucks. I know we mentioned this before, but for the family, they've been living this for 30 years. And now they have to continue living it and fighting it, and that sucks for them. So
that is terrible.
Yeah,
because it's like that, unfortunately, with the court dates and then appeals and all of that, like that's probably defined more about their lives than anything else. Like,
yeah. And it's like, okay, so they're what, 46 and 50? So right. This is the majority of their life.
Over half of it, yeah.
Yeah. You can't just have that closure because you know that he's fighting it tooth and nail the whole time and trying to, I don't know, change what's already been done, you know? I just hate it for them. And the reason I hate it, because we talked about it last time, is our friend. Her dad was murdered. And she just went to the trial, and we saw how terribly hard it was on her. And to know that in, 7 years he can go up for parole?
Uh-huh, yeah.
That after that 7 years, then she's going to have to go every year and kind of go over the same thing again just to try to
right and it was like his trial, they had to go every, because he had delayed that trial several times over the last year, so she's already put in basically like a year, and then it's sad.
So it's awful
this
for the.
Yeah, it made me think of it when you mentioned that, when we were talking about it last time, that really hit home for me. It made me just think about it totally differently.
Mm-hmm. So that's all that I've got on them.
That's interesting. Same crime and such different sentences. And it was,
you know, one fought it in trial, so I guess he had a jury. And the other, it says that he admitted to it, and he took a plea bargain, which is weird that his plea bargain ended him up in on death row. It's almost like he accepted it.
Right.
He accepted this. He admitted he did it and accepted that sentence. And then, you know, 10 years later and then 20 years later, he's like, oh, wait a minute. I didn't mean it.
Right, right.
I take it back.
Which, and you do normally hear about people accepting like a, turning in like a guilty plea for like a lesser sentence or whatever. So it probably was his, you know, plan.
Right. Yeah. So I don't know. We'll have to see what comes of it, but my gosh, another 10 years, he's liable to just die in prison. An old man.
Yeah. He probably, I mean, I don't know, with that 28-day meal, all that stuff has to be full of, like, preservatives and everything. Like, he can't be that healthy.
Probably have a heart attack.
I wonder if they're friends, if they're in prison together, if they're still friends.
I didn't even look to see. They're probably, you think if people commit crimes together, they would put them in different prisons, though?
Oh, yeah, I do.
Well, maybe because when he would have to be in a special prison anyways, because he's on death row. Every prison has a death row.
Right. And then the other one, Shirley, is in like a supermax.
Yeah. Did you see that, I'm having an ADD moment, that, comment? You probably didn't because you're never on Facebook. I can't find it. Somebody made a comment on Facebook. I'm getting to it right now. I just have to scroll way far down. On Gabrion.
Okay.
It's back at the beginning. I'm almost there. Okay. Where's it at? Where's it at? Here it is. Okay. So somebody commented and said John Weeks is her cousin and she would love to listen to the podcast. And I sent her the link.
Whoa.
Yeah.
So they never found his body, right?
No. Yeah. He's still missing.
He went on that drug run and never came back.
Yep. To Arizona.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Mindy, I hope you're still listening. Yeah.
Wow.
Interesting that she found our Facebook page.
Yes, and that was our first case.
Mm-hmm. That's what I told her. I said it was our first one, so hopefully we'll get a little bit better. We have that snafu with the
sound
audio on that one.
Yeah, we did have a bit of a snafu on that one. Oh wow. Okay. That's cool.
Yeah,
I wonder what she has, like, if there's any family, like, beliefs or, you know how it's like you'll read that something happened one way, but then you talk to people's family and they're like, actually, no, this is how it is. Like, yeah. I wonder if there's anything there with that.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what his family thinks.
Mindy?
Well, yeah, let us know.
Yes. Oh, my goodness.
Okay, so... if y'all do want to let us know something, we have email.
Yes.
At dyingtokillpodcast@gmail.com. We have a Facebook page, Dying to Kill Podcast. We have Instagram. What is it? Dying to Kill_podcast?
Yes, right? There's an underscore on the Instagram.
What else do we have? In the Instagram bio, there's a link where you can leave voice messages if you want to call in and leave us a little message.
Yeah. Let's see here. And you can also get to that from the Anchor app.
Yes.
And you can listen to us on basically all of the large podcast platforms.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am. Well, thank you so much, Misty. What's your silver lining here?
Oh, I need a silver lining. I forgot to have a silver lining, and now I'm having a complete brain.
That's okay. I don't have one either, but my silver lining is just that man playing dead while on fire. Like, I am just blown away.
I know. What a dad, huh?
Yes, what a dad. That is some I Survived shit. Like, oh my word. And then just having the thought of like, okay, so I'm going to play dead, and then I'm going to get up and I'm going to rinse off this gasoline, and then I'm going to go out in this below freezing weather and rescue my kids. Like, oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. That's a good silver lining for the story.
Yeah. And I don't think I realized when we talked about this last time that he played dead while being on fire. Like,
yeah. So I don't know, because they weren't very successful at burning the house down. So I don't know.
Terrible arsonist.
I mean, it said they doused him in gasoline and set him on fire, but maybe it didn't catch or something. You know, like maybe the gas burned off and it didn't catch.
Right,
I don't know, but they weren't very successful arsonists. So, But anyways, that's all I've got for today.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
All right. Bye, Kelly.
Bye, Misty. Bye, guys.
Bye, y'all.